Kintsugi Heroes brings you the following flood resilience stories in partnership with Singleton Neighbourhood Centre and grant funding from the Hunter New England and Central Coast Primary Health Network. To find out more about this podcast, head to kintsugiheroes.com.au. On July 6th, 2022, the worst flood in 70 years hit the town of Broke and the surrounding Hunter Valley region. The community is still recovering from the trauma the floods brought, destroying their homes and their livelihoods. In this special limited series of Kintsugi Heroes, John Millam sits down with the community who suffered as a result of the floods and gives them space to share their adversity, resilience, and compassion. It's only through connection and empathy that there can be a path to recovery. These are stories of trauma and can be confronting. If you find they have a triggering effect, please reach out to someone who can help keep you safe. Now listen in as John takes you beyond the deluge with Kintsugi Heroes.
Welcome everyone back to another Kintsugi Heroes story. And today we're really excited to hear from Kirsty and Quinton McLeod, who are the owners and managers of Starline Alpaca Farm Stay in Broke, which has I have a soft spot for, having been there myself. But guys, welcome to Kintsugi Heroes, the stories of the floods, Broke 2022. And I just wanted to, I'll introduce you, but I just want to offer the fact that you guys have been, in this area for quite some time now, and you have a passion for farming and the whole wine experience and so on. But you actually end up with alpacas, right? So it's an interesting story, I'm sure. From a criminology background.
Yes.
Christy. So I know they're little crime, they're little rascals, the alpacas. So maybe if I throw over to you guys and maybe you guys can share a little bit about what brings the McLeod family to Broke, a bit of backstory, and then, of course, leading up to the 6th of July 2022, what was going on for you guys?
Well, we came here sort of by a twist of fate. It's a bit of an interesting story.
Cool.
What had happened is I, obviously having a criminology and social science background, have had a bit of a lifetime of just trying to be a helping person.
Yeah.
And I'd helped out a young person, and she said to me, I want to give something back to you. And I want to gift you a holiday as a thank you for my life. And I said, okay, sure, no worries. We had met and married in the region, and we sort of came up for the holiday. And
it was sort of after our son was born, it was sort of a dirty weekend. We haven't really had a chance to sort of get away when our son was born, and it was our first chance to get
like
away.
Like any early parents, probably weekend for sleep.
Yeah, pretty much.
So we ended up here, and at the time I was a chemical formulator for a chemical company on the Central Coast. And I was sort of had enough of it, and it was quite dangerous, and wasn't great for my health.
Yeah.
I've worked on farms previously, but while we're up here going to wineries, I just decided to start asking people if they had any work going. 2 weeks later, I had a job in a winery. So
fantastic.
I was doing all their tractor work and vineyard work, and that's how we sort of got back up into the valley. And I was doing that for 4 years, and then I was offered the farming position here in that Starline, and sort of never looked back, really.
Yeah, it sort of evolved from there, from, you know, a gifted holiday, and it brought us to the world of alpacas and agritourism, and something we've become very passionate about, and sort of combined like some of our skills and knowledge into a weird concoction of agritourism management with alpacas.
I think it was also a fact that we both grew up. I grew up in a lot of different places, but we both grew up in cities, and I didn't really want that for our kids. I wanted them to have a more countrified learning, hands-on things rather than being city. And this sort of ticked all the boxes for us. And then 1 week when we looked into agritourism and how it worked, we realized what we could give to people with this, with Starline Alpacas, and give that country experience to the city folk and let them know what it is like out here.
And an interesting fact is, after the fact of us moving here, I'd actually got dressed for our wedding in Broke, and I later came to find out that some of the houses that we'd lived in, and my relatives actually were some of the first settlers of Broke.
Wow.
No concept. So I've actually come home after a long, convoluted
trip. My goodness.
Yeah.
So your DNA has called you home.
I think it has.
Yeah. Wow. I love that story. Like, yeah. And it goes to country. What you're talking about, you know, when you talk about agribusiness and promoting urban people and experience about in the country, you know, aren't we calling people back to country?
Absolutely, back to place, back to land, and that has been our sole goal in the vision that we have for Starline. And so we've chosen to make it as inclusive and accessible for people to come and have that farm experience, and we've built it on the morals that we have for country hospitality and inclusivity and, you know, passion. We have a little bit of a love for the old way of doing things. So we have the spinning and the fiber. We've got some like mindfulness and healing workshops that are happening and community programs. We also had for a time outdoor daycare, like a rewilding program that was happening, because it's
something
a little lost. It's a little lost.
Yeah, so. I think getting people away from, although we're on it right now, but getting people away from technology and back into
feeling
hands-on things and feeling things and looking at things from a different perspective.
Where things come from, how things happen.
Yeah. Especially in the farming, I think a lot of people go to the grocery market, supermarkets and buy their groceries, and they don't have an idea of where things come from. Now, we're not technically in the market for producing food or vegetables yet, but we produce a fibre that is quite good for jumpers and things. And again, people don't realise where it all comes from. You go buy a woolen jumper from a shop store, and yes, it's expensive because it's a good quality product, but they don't understand where it comes from. They don't understand what it means to have an animal and raise an animal, make sure that animal's nice and healthy to be able to give us the products that we use on a daily basis. Giving that opportunity to people coming to the farm to see that, I think it's a great
passion for us.
Yeah.
And that passion led you to invite the enigmatic alpacas into your life, obviously. Not just at producing the fiber, but also as you talk about, as a conduit to bring the experience of farming back to the world. But
they're quite therapeutic.
Mm-hmm. But it's interesting because leading into you came in and you reignited the passion and connected back to country. And of course, you invited other people into your world and gave them that experience. And of course, there were other people there leading into the 6th of July, wasn't there? You had people in place.
Yes, we had young families. I think the youngest little person, she was about 6 months old.
We had 8 families all together.
And your family, of course.
And my family.
And that was just what was on site.
That's not including when it all happened. I managed to get a couple of families from Broke as well up to the farm.
We had 8 families on site with little kids ranging from 6 months to, I think, around 11.
Yeah.
So there were a lot of young people.
So leading up to that, what were your thoughts around, because it had been wet and, there'd been bits and pieces of flooding across the board leading up. How did, what was happening for you guys, leading up to the day the river broke?
Well, for us, I've always had I call it a country woman's knowing.
Cool.
It's a knowingness. And so I had actually been preparing for something. And preparedness is very much in my nature. You're laughing about it. It's so true, isn't it?
I am, yeah.
No, I love it.
I was even saying to him maybe a week before, I think you need to go get petrol. He's like, why would I need to do that? I'm telling you, which is such a blessing because we had some. So we have preparedness and canning, which is something we are going to be doing more of. I'm very much into the homesteading sort of culture. And so for me, I was already at a level of preparedness, which was of benefit and blessing to the immediate environment.
We had cupboards full of food and prepared for what was about to happen. But I think what we sort of had to stop and sit back and look at was where we're situated. It's up high. So although the flooding came in, and it came in very quickly, and I think it came in a lot quicker than most people thought it was going to. Yeah.
We were sort of listening to we were listening to things. We were also listening to some of the old knowledge coming through. Some people were saying, no, it's not going to, but our older generation remembered, the stories back a little while ago and saying, look, it is a possibility. So I took that as being, I'm going to trust the old knowledge.
Yeah.
So we were sort of preparing, we were moving the alpacas to the highest ground. It could.
Yeah, well, as I said, we're quite lucky in the fact that we are up on a hill. Although not a very big hill, we ended up being an island basically with a lot of other properties on the street. But I think that made us even more prepared for when we did have the eight families from Sydney. And
we're fortunate to also have know that we had a large backup solar system.
So part of the property and it's the corrugated iron you're looking at is part of our function centre. That with four cottages is all off-grid. It all runs off its own solar energy. So we were lucky enough to be able to put the families into the cottages that ran off-grid.
Were not used to,
a lot of them from Sydney and cities. So they weren't used to the no power and no running water because out here it's all tank water. It's not. Not about just opening the faucet and water's right there. We have to really be concerned on where these
things are. Our concern was knowing the resources and preparedness and the level of knowledge we had was good. Our concern was how come to get our community to our place knowing that this was right in our zone. This is in our skill set. This would probably, with all the off-grid stuff that we have done and we have all different modes of cooking and generators and just something we've always been interested in preparedness. And it's a passion for us again in our next chapter. We'd like to.
And since the flood, we've also made it aware to the town and to the local services and things that if we've got the resources. When the flood was happening, they were all down at Broke Hall and they had no power and they had all these whiteboards up and it was where everybody was going. So since the flood, we've also put our hand up and said, look, we're quite happy to house the emergency services and everything because we have this amazing space and we have the solar panels and we have the power backup to be able to host these people that really do come out and look after the everyday people.
So, I suppose in answer to your question, in the lead up, we were quite prepared as a business and as a family.
Yeah.
Obviously, the physical preparations really fell into your expertise space. Were you emotionally prepared and psychologically prepared? Do you think that was a factor?
For me, given my background in high trauma, I was thinking to myself again, here's a skill set that I have to offer, helping identify trauma, helping identify, people who are, not seeing it. People tend to come to me because they know, my history and what I've dealt with. So I'm that person, the eternal mother quite often calls me. I was preparing for that. I was going to be able to utilize like the grit and the deeper emotional understanding that I have. I didn't prepare for my the gravity of that. For me, I was not thinking, I don't think either of us ever thought about ourselves until far after the fact. We were like, okay, this is what we can do. This is what we have. This is our strengths. How can we apply that for our community? That's the soul and for our animals.
And for others, other people, and other people's animals. And,
yeah, that's true.
I think it was, we were prepared for the worst, but we didn't expect it to be as bad as it was.
No. This got like the gravity.
The gravity scope of it. And I think we just took it day by day. If you get caught up in the weeds, it's not going to help you or others. So I was lucky enough to get two families from broke up before the floods. And they stayed on the farm with us. And one of them's a good friend of mine, and he helped me carry a hay bale across the floodwaters to people's horses that were stuck out in broke and they couldn't get back.
Yeah.
But getting out, once the flood had receded enough for us to get across, it was like it was quite surreal to walk around and see how bad it was and how bad the damage places were.
I think the harder part for us was, when you're talking about emotional preparedness, is that when you kind of, you are directly affected but indirectly as well, you don't have the same level of like adrenaline going as other people do. So it becomes like a compassion fatigue. Makes sense?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like looking on the out, you know, when you're going through something, when you're in it, it's kind of practical. But when you're looking on the outside, it's quite shocking to observe. Like a lot of people's experience, because we took in so many people. Very overwhelming, the empathy.
And I think when I managed to get across into town to try and help people out, Kirsty had messaged quite a few people that were evacuated. All of a sudden my phone was going off saying, can you go to my house? I didn't get a chance to lock it up. There's looting going on. Can you please go look up this? Check out the house. Let me know if there's any damage or, you know, things like that.
Goodness, we can probably lead up.
And that was, although at the time I didn't really think much of it, I just went in and locked people's houses up for them. And when you sit back and think about it, you think, who would go and loot a area that's just been destroyed? And, you know.
I was just hoping you didn't meet any of them. I hope he doesn't come face to face with any of these people, because I don't know how it's going to go, to be honest.
I don't think, I was there during the daylight hours and there was plenty of people around as well there to say yes.
Thank goodness.
But yeah, just going onto people's properties and going through their houses, it was devastating. To walk through some people's houses that had flooded, and then some people's houses weren't even touched.
So nothing can quite prepare you for the, because these are not strangers. These are people who you know, you go to school with the, you know, they're school mums. They're your mates that you know you've had a beer with. They're the people that have had, you know, operations that you've been through, or lost someone and you've been there for that, or they're the little kids' birthday parties. These are families that you've supported their business and they've supported you. And like in a rural community, it's just, I'm not saying that like, you know, non-rural communities are like this, but out here our lives intertwined in a way, and our livelihoods are intertwined in a different way. So the effects are more personal, whether or not it directly happened to you or as a community, there's immunity there, so it is a very deep effect.
Broke is that community.
It is, it's
that,
definitely.
There's, you know, although we're sort of regions to Broke and
I'm actually, come on.
Hang on, you're talking to the children of the founders.
Everybody knows everyone here. There's families that have been here for hundreds of years, and all their kids and grandkids and great grandkids have all gone through Broke Public School, and then you got people like us that's come into the community and been welcomed to open homes, because we not only care and we help out, and it's sort of, you scratch my back, I'll scratch your back sort of mentality. You just don't get that. I mean, we've lived in on the Central Coast and Sydney and places like that, and a lot of the times don't even know your neighbour.
But out here you do, and what's theirs is kind of, it's yours in a way. So you care about their property and their animals and their kids and family. You care. So, leading up to the flood, which I think where we're up to, is our mindset was quite large. Like, look, how are we going to get people out with, mobility issues, or people that are struggling? Or we knew that there was one local person who'd recently gone through a separation, and did she have the skills? Did she have the ability to get her animals out and load them out? And we were thinking of what we could do, how much we could bring in.
It was a matter of sitting back, going,
we have the accommodation.
We have accommodation. Our house didn't get flooded. Yes, we're affected, but nothing near what they were affected like in town. So I still, although we didn't have power in our house, we had people in the area that did have the power on the farm, and they were my first sort of make sure they're okay. And then it was, we were the lucky ones. We were able to offer help. We were able to offer accommodation. We were able to go into the town and say, what do you need us to do?
Can we get out?
Can we do anything for you? We offered accommodation to people that couldn't come and stay back in the house because they were too badly damaged. We tried everything that we could to help others, because at the end of the day, it wasn't about us at all. It was about what we could do to help people.
That's right. Absolutely.
And people that we've grown to appreciate and respect, we might not see them all the time, but every now and then you catch up for a beer, or you get together with the community centre and they'll have barbecue or some sort of fundraiser, and everyone gets together and we all know each other. So
we could offer dry firewood, which we did for anybody who needed that.
Yeah. It's interesting, the juxtaposition, like you were looking at and preparing for an event on an event level scale, and yet you're describing on the day and during the event the little things that you could do, right? That was so it went right back down to the micro level, one person, one task.
And those were the things I feel like that were appreciated. I remember I have a beautiful local friend, Beth, and she was struggling to keep her kids warm. And she said to me, the best thing for me was just that firewood, just be able to keep my children warm was everything. As the flood hit, I think it's my background. I don't always think of this is going to be okay. I more think, this just might not be like this. Really.
Right, yeah.
So, on the farm, we were getting ready. It's a
terrible metaphor, but you almost had the glass half empty kind of water metaphor. But
I did. We're ready for a hit, and one that we felt as prepared as any business or couple or family could take.
Yeah.
We were ready to just go for our community.
I love that, and I love that you focus on community, and the preparation included not just your safety but the safety of the place you live. How do you think now, as you look at that time, when the greatest amount of stress, people are losing things in front of you and they're dealing and they're less prepared or more prepared amongst themselves, what did you notice? What came through for you?
The first thing I would say I notice is everyone out here are usually quite self-reliant people, and I heard it a lot, there's someone worse off than me. And the amount of people I said, I don't want to offend you here, but you are that person that needs help right now.
And
that's okay.
Think it's I think it really is an Australian way to be so glad it's done. Because I went into a lady's house that the water level, I'm 6'2", and the water level was up to my shoulders.
I remember she fell into my arms. Yeah. Which was at the thing. She fell into my arms. And I said to her, "You're not okay." So I sent you over. I'm like, "Buy this." She's so stoic, but yeah.
And to go there and talk to them and say, "Listen, you can come and stay on the farm. We have power. We have electricity. You can be close to your house. You can spend the day there. Come back to a warm shower." The amount of people that turned around and said, "No, I'm not doing that. I'm leaving my house." Yeah. It's
strong. They're strong people.
They're strong people out here, and hats off to them. And they pushed through it. And just the little things that we could do. I mean, one was get a heater out to somebody that works. The other one was calling because we run a farm stay. I've got contacts for air conditioning, electricals and stuff like that. Calling some of my contacts to come out and check on people's houses and see if they can get things running properly for them. Little things like that weren't little to them. It was big to them.
We tried to keep it very quiet. It's probably actually the first time we've spoken about it, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because for us it was not about anyone knowing. It was, we wanted to maintain everyone's privacy and just help out in the way that we could. We set up a little food suppliers for anyone on site. I would put food out every day for them.
Well, we also turned our function center into a almost like kindergarten.
Daycare
for all.
Yeah, kids. A lot of parents were busy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Our concern, you know, being that we are a family establishment and we have such a knowledge of, you know, kids and with the flood waters.
And it was the local teachers that came out and helped out with the daycare while the parents were dealing with the flooding and stuff. The kids were at least in a safe environment and be able to play and have a little bit of normality before going back to a flood-affected house.
We were worrying, knowing what kids are like, that they won't understand the gravity of what flood water is, and that's something that not everyone thinks about. Oh, it's just a bit of water. Well, in a flood, it's not just a little bit of water.
And then, I mean, it's not just that, the health risk. But everywhere out here, all these houses, we're on tank and there is some town water going through, but most of the houses are septic tanks.
Yeah.
All of that went under, so all that came out, and people don't realise that.
No, it's not. It's not swimming pool.
No, that's right. It's not. It's not swimming quality.
It's not something you want to be stuck in at all. So you know, just the amount of effort from the SAS and even the local mines, they sent out people to help, and we don't compare to what they did. Oh. The RFS that went around and. Even though they're locals as well, they're going around helping other people before they help themselves. So, well, the way I feel is what we did was small in comparison to what the SAS and the RFS and all those land services and water truck volunteers and all that.
It took a lot. So we were just one little cog in a big wheel of things. So that's where we're.
Yeah, that's what. Yeah, you were looking at the individuals and seeing them respond. What did you learn about the people you live in community with?
I don't think the community will ever quite be the same in the way that you got to see the best. I'm not going to say the worst, but the best and the worst of people.
Yeah,
you got to see.
But it is a stressful situation.
In trauma, not in general.
Yeah.
In the way that they respond, you got to see the people that were just wanting to help. Some people were shut down. They all had a different coping strategy. Some very small, minute members of, as we touched on, around to it were opportunistic. I got to learn really the character of a lot of people. Some, it's just some inspiring, really inspiring stories. I really got to learn the weight of how important it is to live in a community like this and how that's been a little bit lost in some places and how fortunate we are to have a community that'll band together, especially Mick McArdle. Hats off to him. His response was incredible and it was so hard for him.
I think
God, he didn't steal a job.
Yeah, he did a really good job. And it was hard for him. And he was the front man of the recovery and a local community member. And, you know, what a leader to have in Broke, someone that pull themselves together, even though it's...
He's going through their own stuff. Yeah. We saw a lot of people going through their own stuff, but being just generosity for the greater good. And like Ev did the most amazing job. She's an amazing local. I call her Broke's matriarch. But she did an amazing job pulling together the Broke Hall. And I really learnt what's important to people, and it's something that I now really want to touch on when anyone's dealing with a rural community, that they understand that the concept of family is different out here. It's not just the family unit of the person. It's the neighbour. It's the animals. Some of these animals and the genetics that farmers have been working on are so old, and they are so important. So, and it's livelihoods. So that's included in the concept of family out here. Yeah. It's not just.
You've got to also look out with the animal side of things. When you're dealing with a flood or a fire or any of that sort of stuff, you really just have to open the gates and say, sorry, guys, but this is the best I can do. And hope to God that they get out and able to sort of fend for themselves, because if it was to have flooding on this farm, we've got close to 90 alpacas. There's no way I'm going to be able to move all of them. There's just no way. So, and it's the same with a lot of people out here with
cattle,
with animals and cattle.
And also that grapes. Like, grapes are such a huge part of Broke. Yeah. We've had this. We've had
as a community. Binds of family too,
Binds of family too.
And those vineyards and knowing working in the vineyards, all that would have destroyed all the grapeage. Yeah. And
it's been a couple of tough seasons out here. What
we
community.
Went from sort of drought to fires to flooding. And you've got, that's, you know, three seasons for the
Broke has been, Broke as a town has been through, the drought, then the fire, so there's a lot of smoke taint on the grapes. Then we had, obviously, the pandemic, and then we've had a flood. Like, in terms of resilience, the gravity as a community who relies on, you know, tourism, farming, obviously, you know, bit of culture, how many hits can a community take? So what I've learned is
the resilience of the community is quite astounding.
It is.
that's an amazing point to make, like the idea, because the flood isn't gone when the water's gone.
No.
No. Look, we've still got people in town that aren't in their house.
One of our best friends in town, she is finally nearly at the stage of having her house rebuilt. And this is a long time now.
Yeah. I mean, it was 2022. It's now 2024. So, you know, it's a lot of it's to do with, unfortunately, insurances and things like that.
But on that, there is a legacy that the floods left in rebuilding livelihoods.
Yeah.
Because our livelihoods out here are intertwined with country and with land and also with tourism. Like the tourism sector, which has taken a hit, and then, you know, our landscape has taken a hit, our animals have taken a hit, our families have taken a hit. It's been an incredible strain.
As you say, what a run. So why is everyone still there? Why is everyone still
fighting? Oh, they are determined folk. Like, what?
You think Broke?
Broke me. It's kind of like I get why they call it that.
Look, I think it's just
grit.
It's grit and determination. But, I mean, to stop, you have to stop and walk outside with a cup of coffee in the morning and you look at your backyard and go,
that's why.
This is why we're here.
Yeah. And we do it for our neighbours too.
You see the range, you see the mountain range. You don't hear the cars, you don't, you know. Yeah. This is why we're here.
And if you give up, there is a flow on effect. So it, like, if we were to give up, it would be, you know, the wedding, and we are the largest accommodation venue in the region. So, like, that goes away. That tourist traffic goes away. So if you give up, and this is why I mentioned about the importance of community, it has an effect, and you don't want to be the week one amongst all these, you know, strong people.
And especially businesses in Broke, you know, we're all a part of a ecosphere.
Yeah.
We all contribute to bringing tourism into the area, whether it be people just to come and look at the alpacas or people to go to different vineyards or the local soap shop or, you know, all these little things that people don't really realise is out here, but we're all part of that ecosphere. And if one of us fall down, then it will be a hit to the tourism, and it will be a hit to the economy of the area.
I can't actually imagine many Broke people giving up. Look, it's a thing to be in the makeup. I think if you've got that attitude, you fit in here great.
Yeah.
It's kind of been bashed out of everyone by now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It has.
Beautiful. But, of course, going through all that, you don't end up without scars and change.
You don't.
What do you think the people in Broke need to do to look after themselves and their
community? Well, out here, and in most rural communities, you'll know that there is extra support services for mental health. We have lost members, which is very sad.
Hmm.
Because of the effects of.
I think it's. We also got to stop being hard asses. You know, we got to stop being chat.
Yeah, we do.
I know they do it down at the Broke Hall, and I'm one that I haven't gone yet, but they do like once a month a cup of tea.
Yeah.
And a chat down at Broke Hall. So having that open discourse and saying to your neighbour, look, I'm struggling, I need help, and be willing to accept that help.
It's the acceptance for help.
Whether it is for mental or whether it is someone coming on a physical fence for you, you know.
We're more likely to accept help for a neighbour. The response on the ground after the flood was really good. I remember talking to a lady called Tabitha, and she sort of said to me, oh, you're okay? And she said, I'm telling you, you're going to crash. I can see it in you because, you know, you just keep going. So I think having the support services was good, and it's something that needs to be continued. I know Mick was very, very good about putting those support services out there, and we actually facilitated with some amazing ladies locally to get some grants happening, and we were able to provide just the venue for the BRCA and Agilopolis with some yoga teachers got together,
wellness grant. So
yeah,
we host a weekly yoga, and they do kids yoga as well.
Some other like healing things that were put into place.
Yeah,
for rebuilding some wellness programs that we've tried to sort of put into. I mean, that's what we can do to offer. Is a place for locals to come and practice mindfulness. We have like the sound healing and the ice baths happening here. And though I can take no credit for the actual programming, we can at least provide the space.
Yeah, well,
yeah.
Yeah.
I did.
To do that. So we've tried to get conversations going.
Yeah. I have seen on the, you know, the Facebook notice, you know, inviting folks to work yoga. And I smile, you know, with the image you painted of that stoic survivor standing on his, you know, up to his corner going, yeah, no, I'm all right. The bloke down the road needs help. Turning up for yoga. Right. But that is really the conversations that need to happen. You know, what I'm hearing is that maybe one of the areas is the locals need to learn to connect and care for each other. Almost like, you know, okay, if the bloke's doing it tougher, you help him, and then let him come and help you, Todd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think any investment in the wellness of like a community and recovery, it's just so worth it. It's so worth it, especially a community like this one that's had not just one big hit, like a few. And there needs to be, I know if you look at statistics in rural communities, the men out here are even more stoic than most.
Look, I mean, I'm
guilty.
Guilty. I think most blokes are, you know, it's we're not a talkative bunch. We're not, we're not one to wear our feelings on our sleeves, and especially the guys out here, they're all hardworking, you know, miners and farmers, and you know, we just don't. And it could change, and I think trying to figure out a way for guys to get together and, you know, sometimes not even talk about their feelings, but just having another bloke to talk to, whether it is the men's shed or...
Yeah, the beautiful Bianca has got an idea about having a men's shed and working with Soldier on providing a space for some of that type healing work to happen.
Because I think I know from myself, my own point of view, you know, when I'm having a bad day or I'm down on myself, if I go and do something physical, or whether it is fencing or building a table or dealing with the animals, that all goes away. It's sort of our natural way of coping with things. And it also gives you that break to come back to and think about things.
And maybe that's a factor is why the community has been so resilient. Like you don't really have time to...
It's a lot to do.
Yeah.
You don't have time to stop it.
Yeah, it doesn't stop.
No.
Which is one of the questions, you know, like you talked about the devastation you saw when you were back in town and how that impacted you. And, of course, it's been some time, right? It wasn't cleaned up overnight. So what was that like, watching people's lives in the, you know, put out in the front of their yard?
It was.
You saw a lot.
Yeah.
You're one of the first over.
It was hard.
Yeah.
When you were either walking or driving the streets, which took a while before we could get a vehicle in there.
You best went across without.
Yeah, I had a friend of mine with a stick would actually cross the floodwater, and he was telling me where there was holes while I was carrying like a bale of hay to go feed some horses.
We went across because a little girl that we had staying here who meant a lot to us, she just couldn't settle, and she was in tears because her horse would go. Queen had gone to go get this young lady who'd recently separated, knowing that she didn't have anyone there to help her, and she couldn't load, the horse wouldn't load.
After the floodwaters receded and you managed to get back out in town, it was every house, their whole interior of their house was out in front of it to get
some even had signs on them, which was the hardest part.
Yeah.
And when I was touching some of the harder parts of the people, not our community, but please don't take these, so at least the assessors can look at.
Yeah.
There were signs.
Yeah,
they were spray painting on mattresses saying, please don't take, because you know, it was sort of like council cleanup where people go and pick through your rubbish.
Yeah.
And, they were saying, don't take any of this because we still need our insurance assessment to come through.
Yeah.
And there was lots of people that were driving, especially at night time, would come drive around and pick through people's trash.
What they call it, disaster tourists, was the term that was sort of put out there.
And then as the businesses, or sort of all the businesses got together and said, okay, well, you know, to keep the economy going, we're going to stay closed for this period of time, and then we're going to start opening back up. And that was because we didn't want to bring the tourists into the area. We wanted people to have that sort of privacy to grieve. And
I think people lost all their photos and photos of loved ones, and like even people who'd lost a child, and they've lost every photo record.
There was we went to one of the meetings in the church, and a lady came and said, "Look,
it was terrible." She stood up in the middle of the meeting, and she's like, "I found someone's ashes." So there were ashes floating around and not knowing.
My goodness.
Who they belonged to. And it was just, all of people's lives, all of the kids, all their toys, because they've obviously been contaminated. Memorabilia.
Mm.
Everywhere people slept. It must have felt just so incredibly invaded, like vulnerable to lose everything, you know. I can't fathom, you know, how they, I know how they did share, but I could never completely comprehend, because we lost animals and we lost some of our things, but not like,
Look, we're at the end of the day, we're lucky, you know, and we did what we could to help.
Yeah.
Some of the stories that came out were devastating.
They were devastating, you know, misplaced ashes, not being able to find, you know, your pets, your animals, losing everything. The gravity, I don't think that you can ever truly comprehend, you know, the loss, because it's not just the immediate loss, it's the loss of all of the things you've treasured, and then rebuilding and it's not the same, and then it's the loss of your future, like it'll be a crop, a livestock, or it's so big. It's so big. Driving through, it was very much like you're in a
war zone.
And the people were, some of them, you know, kind of shell shocked, that's not the right term, but
some of the houses that their footings were wiped away, and on me, there was a caravan in a hole that was as deep as the caravan. You're like, oh, wow. So the way the water swirled around, it's quite intense.
And unfortunately, the warnings, there was no warning, came in too safe. And trying to convince some people, especially in a should be right community, was quite the task.
People have said that they got the evacuation about half an hour after they, getting out was possible, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I was in town.
You were.
The night of the flood, and I was watching this water rise and rise. And then we had the SAS come in and say, if you're not out within, I think it's like 10 or 15 minutes, you're not leaving the town. Because the way out was going to get flooded in, and that's when I pulled the families aside and say, we have place for you up on the farm. Get your stuff together. Pack your cars. Let's go.
Some of them got over over the bridge.
Yeah,
like,
so when I first went into town before the flood happened, there was no water over the bridge. And then when I came back out to come up the road to come back to the farm, it was sort of lapping the bottom of my view. I've got a view. So it came out super.
You were probably one of the last out.
But as I said, I managed to get a couple of families across. A lot of other people already evacuated with buses.
Yeah.
So
your concern is all the families.
Yeah.
But we did all the good.
Yeah.
We've done anymore.
Yeah. So you so clearly and beautifully described the impact of this on the people and the place, but and it's so tragic, you know, to hear those stories. And yeah, that's not all the story, is it? There, you know, do you see the good, anything that was good come out of this process?
Yeah, I think for the community, I saw, you got to know people at a level, you know, that you didn't.
It definitely brought community together more. It also showed who is a really good leader within the community, who is willing to
highlight everyone's skill.
It did highlight everyone's skill, and it showed who's willing to sort of put their own stuff aside and go, okay, I'm willing to help you.
Yeah, you learn.
as Kirstie said, I think it really showed who, and maybe a cliche, but
the beautiful, the good,
the bad, and the ugly of the community.
Yeah.
Mm.
You got to see some really inspiring stories. You got to be quite moved, and you got to see who was willing to be an amazing human.
Yeah.
Make a difference. Again, yeah.
At the end of the day, you know, it wasn't about us. You know, it wasn't about one particular person. It was about everybody.
It was a coming together and a collective fight. It was a collective rebuild. It saw the Borough Hall become just such a hub. And, you know, you'd walk in there and you'd see like these steel magnolias, these ladies who were like, they were like, right, this is what I can do. I can do food. And they were doing food, and there were people like, okay, I can't do food, but I can do time. And they were packing grocery things.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it'd be, I know there was a local olive producer, which might have been Whispering Brook. Anyway, they're like, okay, we've got olive oil, we can do oil. Or Ben and Jace from Monkey Place. Oh God, he was incredible.
They just quite a lot of catering.
Yeah, caterer.
Franchise, catering
barbecue. He didn't stop for days. He was there breakfast. He was there, like, just such a shining light in what he did. Or it was like us, we can provide accommodation if you need somewhere to stay. Mm. And we were washing a lot of, like, I washed, I can't tell you how many loads of washing I did.
Because
we have washing machines.
And of course, everything needed washing.
Oh. we had a lot of community come to us with cars and washing.
Yeah.
You know, we're lucky. And again, what we did, I don't feel it was anything major or special. It's just what we could do.
It's just what you could do. There were some amazing electricians that were coming out and looking at like electrics. There were, so you got to see some of the greater side of humanity, and that was just beautiful. Another thing we also learned out of it is, like, we identified resources for community. So we put our hand up and said, look, if anything like this happens again, we have solar. We have paddocks. We have, like, if we could run a hub here, you could have a working little commercial kitchen on site. So we can run an emergency service or provide something for emergency services. I think they said to us we'll do some resilience leading, whatever.
Yeah, so the brokers developed a
systems.
A resilience, like an emergency resilience team. And there's six of us that are part of the team leader. We're one of them here. And then it's sort of spread out through broke. So basically what they found was that everybody in the area was trying to contact the hall to get information. Yeah. And it was,
they weren't able to access.
There's a lot of congestion. So what they've done is we've got our resilience team leaders within community now, so if something like this happens again, we're the ones that are going to have all the information, so that we're going to be able to have a lot of people contact us or come to us to ask us.
And same with the other centres. I think the good thing came out is that there's procedures in place now around the brook, and also there was the need for advanced warning systems. Like and this is something that I am just, I would shout it to the rooftops if I could, is that for a rural community with a different concept of family and livelihood, it needs to be advanced, because a lot, like, farmers won't leave their animals. Like, you have to drag them out, like, kicking and screaming. Yeah. And we won't leave our neighbours. Like, it's like you don't leave someone behind. So we need more time to get out. Because of those factors, because it's your livelihood. It's not like, oh, just leave it, it's stuff.
Mm.
It's not just stuff. It's your income, it's your family security, it's your life's work.
And it's when it comes to the sort of animal side of things, it's the, you know, farmers that are responsible with their animals, so all have to be tagged for sort of biosecurity reasons as well. But if your animals, if you're going through a disaster where you've had to open your gates up to let them free, you want to be able to locate them again. So to have them correctly tagged and have like the local land council and all that sort of stuff come and be able to go, okay, well, this is actually their animal, pick it up and bring it back to them.
Yeah, I
think it's really important. And I think information and teaching people on what exactly to do in situations like this, I think that is
I think preparedness, and it's something that we have a bit of a heart for at the farm, and I think watch this space, you know, for stuff like that. But advanced warning systems, and I would encourage every community to have, I know the surely right thing is it's part of our culture, but like, what if it's not?
Yeah.
What if it can
go so far when everything is dropping around you. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love what you said earlier about old knowledge.
Old knowledge, yeah.
How do you think that will play a part in your preparedness for the future?
Oh, I think it's everything. I think so often we think, oh, we know of course, but there is such a wisdom. There's such a wisdom.
There's a wisdom with the traditional owners of the land. They know these areas better than us. But then there's also the wisdom of the bushcraft people that know how to use knives and flintlocks and all those things to create a fire.
And the farmers have their knowledge. There's a collective knowledge there.
Yeah. You know, there's old wisdom from every sort of corner that you look at. And when there's no power, there's no technology.
I get why you like this storytelling thing now.
Yeah. if you're stuck somewhere and you've got no gas, how are you going to start a fire?
People to know, because for us, we had all of that. Mm. I would love to see every family have the capacity to go off grid if the occasion calls for it. I knew we had 3 months. So we personally had 3 months worth of food ready. And so I guess that's what we've learned. Yeah, the learned importance of being prepared, early intervention, procedures, and now we have advanced warning systems coming along the brook. But listening to the people going, it has gone over in the past. And I think it all needs to be brought into a collective knowledge base.
Cool. Collective conversation.
Yes.
Yeah, and getting people together with that knowledge and teaching. I feel that we've lost our way of teaching. It's all done online. It's all computer-based now, and there's none of that hands-on teaching. And we've got great people in the area and throughout Australia that are able to hold seminars to teach people the hands-on things that you need to know to get through a situation like this.
There needs to be a reconnection with the land and the country and understanding what
the wisdom of that.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
That's awesome. That's a great thought. And on that, like now, you know, you're talking about lessons learned and, you know, steps people can make to increase preparedness and the steps the community can make. I'm interested, what then is your view? How do you feel about Broke's future and your future as part of it?
I love this place.
Yeah, look, I think Broke itself has got a really good future. I think it's
If you can get through all
it's
of that.
it's an upcoming region.
I think we're leaning into our quirkiness, and I think the whole experience has sent us all a little left of centre in a way.
Yeah.
It's kind of got its own vibe. We're kind of like, oh, shit, you know what? Yeah, living the dream.
So yeah, look, I see Broke going from strength to strength. As Kirsten was saying, we've gone through a lot, and you look at from 2019 through to today, what everything that's happened, drought, bushfires, COVID, flooding.
I think it's made us stronger as a community and as a collective.
Yeah, it's also made us look at what's important and what we need to grow, not only as individuals, but as a region and as businesses as well.
We're quite formidable now as a region, I suppose.
Yeah.
Not to be shaken, and we've sort of definitely unpacked a little bit in the road less travelled or a little bit left of centre. I think what we do need is people to come and visit a wounded community. Please come and support these businesses, get back on their feet, because, I mean, I know you could go to some of our neighbouring regions, but it's important to support the people who've endured. I think if you could do anything to help a business or a person get back on their feet after such a spate of things, oh, do it. You'll only be blessing people that really need it, and it will be something good for your soul to do something like that, I believe. If there was ever a town that needed that, it's this one. I know there are many out there. Please visit them all.
Yeah.
Make your holiday there. It makes a difference.
And look at the quirkiness. Look at the small businesses that are in the area.
That's your unique selling proposition.
Look at Bare
Nature's
like their soaps.
Yeah, we've got the soap. It's like a little apothecary shop. You walk in, soaps and everything hanging up. We've got now the honey mead guy that makes honey mead.
We've got new cellar doors like Kale's Gate coming up. Yeah, Lavender Farm.
Small boutique cellar doors coming through.
They're amazing sculptures. There's too many today. Magoonies. We've got all these businesses who have been resilient going, here we are, and we need, that's how we need the support, is to rebuild.
I think if people want to support us and want to come out to the region, I think they'll realise why we love it, not just through our own businesses, but the landscape itself is quite unique. It's, we've got the mountain range in the back of us.
I mean, I know there's some, big hotels and, big fancy overseas things. I mean, if you could do something in your backyard and support a farmer, I don't think you'd be disappointed with our quirky little town.
I think absolutely no one would be disappointed visiting Brogue for sure.
No,
and I think that's a beautiful
distillery now.
Wow, it gets better and better every minute we're on. So
it does.
But look, you have been wonderful advocates for the community you love, and I know you say it was small, but I just want to acknowledge the work you did on behalf of that community.
Thank you.
I'm so very pleased to have heard your story. It's been so much gold, and I thank you for sharing it so vulnerably, so courageously, and for all you've done for your community and all you will do.
Yep.
It's been an absolute pleasure to hear you guys speak about it. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, John. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Beyond the Deluge about the 2022 floods in Broke and the Hunter Valley. If anything in this conversation has had a triggering effect, please seek support and find someone who can help keep you safe. Please share the show to your friends, family, and colleagues so we can help more people with their recovery from natural disaster. If you'd like to find out more about Kintsugi Heroes and our other podcasts, please head to kintsugiheroes.com.au. Our theme song was provided by Colin Lilly. Thanks to Matthew Bliss for editing and production, and to John Millam for hosting the conversations. And most of all, thank you to the community of Broke and the Hunter Valley for sharing their lived experience with us. We'll see you next week in Beyond the Deluge.
when you're broken. Only when you're broken. Only when.